The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly and joining me today are The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook and James Moore. I hope to be discussing Tottenham's 3-0 victory over Arsenal in the North London Derby. No such joy is to be had. So we'll be discussing the North London Derby postponement very shortly and in depth, and I hope with a certain amount of seriousness. But first, Jack, let's start with a bizarre incident in the African Cup of Nations involving a former Spurs player. I laughed out loud at the television.
Well, actually, Danny, it was an incident involving two former Spurs players. Mm. So this was yesterday evening at about... It was kind of towards the end of when the Spurs game would have been. So I was watching one Sky Sports channel showed a compilation of all of Harry Kane's goals in the Premier League for Spurs, which was really good. Then I switched over to Cote d'Ivoire, Sierra Leone, live from Douala. And Cote d'Ivoire were 2-1 up in about the 94th minute. And one of the Cote d'Ivoire defenders, I think, headed the ball back to the keeper, Badri Ali Sangare, who tried to collect the ball, but the pitch was terrible. And yeah. In sliding to try and collect the ball, he kind of got his knees caught in the pitch, tumbled over, injured himself, spilled the ball. The ball was picked up by Sierra Leone's Stephen Colker, formerly a Tottenham Hotspur.
Former England goal scorer.
Yeah. Now playing at Cannes for Sierra Leone. He crossed the ball. Alhaji Kamara kind of slipped, I think, on the bad pitch, but managed to regain his footing cleverly, stuck the ball in.
Sierra
Leone equalised. It was a really good finish because he fell over, managed to get back on his feet and
lifted it over the defender on the line.
Made it 2-2. But then Cote d'Ivoire had already made all five of their subs and they needed someone to go in goal for what remained of stoppage time. And who should they choose but Serge Aurier?
Brilliant.
And so for the last minute or two, down to 10 men, Cote d'Ivoire had Aurier in goal. And Sierra Leone put a few attacks together. I think they forced a corner, which was headed away at the near post. So Aurier didn't have any actual goalkeeping to do. But it was exciting, and I was thinking, I'd love to see him make a save, wouldn't it?
Hold on. So you're saying to me that Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, as you say, they had an injury, and they didn't call the game off?
Yeah.
What?
That's right.
Why did they not call the game off?
Absolutely. Very quickly, before I ruin James's lovely link there between the fun of Serge Aurier being in goal and the postponement of North London Derby, I will make the point, of course. People who know me know that I'm tremendously industrious about some things and often very lazy about others. I'm supporting Cote d'Ivoire, as I always do in tournaments, because all I have to do is turn my Republic of Ireland flag upside down, and I'm already a supporter of that country. It's a very quick fix, and well done, Serge, and we're going to make it through to the next round. All right, no other sport I can see, major sport in the world, is struggling to deal with COVID at the moment in terms of abandoning matches. In the four other major leagues in Europe, one game has been called off because of COVID and its attendant and other attendant issues. Why? Somebody explain to me. We're not blaming Arsenal here. Of course, that's the prelude to blaming Arsenal. That's perfectly okay. Jack, maybe you could come in off your medium run-up and tell me, how have we got to a situation now where not only can you just say, oh, I've got some players suspended and some of them are not feeling very well, and one of them's got to visit his auntie in Croydon and get the game called off. But the Premier League then make the decisions without explaining in detail why they're doing so, thus encouraging the next spurious claim.
Yeah, so I think there's basically two issues here, which ultimately come down to the fact that the Premier League has, I think, in an attempt to be flexible and helpful, has set the bar far too low for a game to be postponed. The first thing is that to be able to play the game, you have to have 13 outfield players fit to play and a goalkeeper. That is the level that the Premier League has set.
Mm-hmm.
And many, you know, I think this would have been, I think, the 20th game to have been called off from a team not being able to fulfill this criteria. The second issue here, and this I think dates back to when Leicester City had their game called off Everton in December, is that unavailabilities that are not COVID can count towards this. Although these rules were conceived for clubs who had a big wave of Omicron or previously or other previous variants ripping through them, which is obviously very contagious. And so that's why the rules were initially come up with. But effectively, the Premier League relaxed the rules by saying that other unavailabilities would also be relevant to these decisions. Now, that means, in the case of Leicester City, if you've got a player playing at Cannes, then that counts towards one of your unavailable players, or rather, other unavailabilities are taken into account, basically. And this means that now I think it's much easier for a game not to be played, because it's not just simply a case of, oh, we've got COVID sweeping through our squad, for example, like Tottenham had in early December, but rather a combination of factors, one of which being COVID. If you've got a few injuries, a few players at Cannes, a few players who've been loaned out or whatever else, or suspended, then all of these things in combination, if you still can't meet the 13 plus one criteria, the game is off. So basically, it's become much easier for a game to be postponed than it was when when these rules were first drawn up.
Okay, that's reasonable. And I'll come back to you about some of the things that I think have exacerbated that situation. James, we don't want to appear too reasonable here. Were you angry that Spurs' game against Arsenal was called off?
Yeah, I was, yeah. I mean, firstly, it wasn't really a surprise. I think the second... who was it who went off early for Arsenal on Thursday night? Chambers came on. Who did he come on for? They had an injury earlier in that game anyway. Someone went off injured and Chambers came on. So it kind of felt this was going to be a problem. You know, they had four players away at AFCON. Later in that game, obviously, they get the suspension as well. Clearly, they have at least one COVID case. And I think that's out there, that's Odegaard, isn't it? I think that's out there. I think we can say that. Or it was now. I mean, we're back in training as of today, I believe.
They've got another one now subsequent to the game being called off.
Just sure. Sure. Yeah, I think in their test on Saturday, they got another one. And they have injuries as well. I think they're three or four players with injuries. Supposedly a couple of knocks, I think, from that game on Thursday night as well. As I mentioned, someone went off. But they've got a big squad. And they sent two players out on loan in the week before that game. Balogun to Middlesbrough and Maitland-Niles to Roma. I mean, I think when those two players were sent out, they were probably aware they had four players off at AFCON. And they probably realised that there was a global pandemic that was threatening Premier League games at that point. I suspect they probably realised that. So it does seem odd to me that they got themselves in a position where they didn't have enough players to play that game at that stage. I'm sure that it's not necessarily about who was missing, but the number. But it does seem like if you've loaned two players out that close to a game like that, when you know you've got four players during the AFCON, are missing for AFCON, and there's a possibility of players getting COVID and they had a couple of injuries before that. That does seem like quite poor planning to me. I don't think this outcome was entirely inconceivable at the point that they did that. I'm not suggesting that they've done that, they've been clever and done that on purpose, but it does seem to me like a bit of an oversight that you would loan two players out and then sure enough you find yourself without enough players in the squad. I mean, obviously it's all a massive grey area because the reality is with player injuries... you know as well as I do that players will play with injuries all the time. And especially in a big London derby, you know, you'll see players... We would have been... If you had seen the team news before the game and player X and player Y for Arsenal were injury doubts, you and I would have been sat there saying, he'll be back. Typical, isn't it? He'll be back just in time to play against Spurs. And you see that all the time. And I'm sure, you know, if it had been Harry Kane of a knock, and we know Harry Kane has had a few knocks down the years, and he'd been half it, I'm sure Arsenal fans would have been expecting Kane to suddenly make a miraculous recovery and be fit for the game in other circumstances. But now, you know, where injuries are a bit of a grey area, it's not a Football Manager, it's not red inch, orange inch, no inch. It's like a sliding scale. It's way more complex than that. And players will play with injuries all the time. And it doesn't take much. And I'm not saying this is necessarily just applies to Arsenal, because this will have happened with the other games that have been off as well. Players will have injuries that perhaps they would have been able to play. And in the circumstances, when there's a possibility of getting a game off which doesn't suit you, you can say, well, this player's injured. And that's not wrong, because the player is injured. But in normal circumstances, you might play the player. And it's not disingenuous to say that a player is not fit, because they're not fully fit. But if you're having to play the game, I'm sure those players could play.
Jack, let me come back to one of the reasons why the games aren't being postponed in other countries is that they're allowing young players to play. Under 21 players are not allowed to play unless they've got four or five, I can't remember the number, appearances under their belt in the Premier League. Some of these footballers...
Oh, sorry, Danny, just to correct you, they are allowed to play, but they don't count as one of the experienced first-teamers who can count up towards the number of 13 outfield players.
The problem with that is that we see a situation where, therefore, you can't have, like in Germany, Bayern Munich played two 16-year-olds the other day. They lost to one of the games, by all means, but they seemed determined to get through the games. And it's as though these under-21, some of whom are 22 years of age and earning 35 grand a week, why have they made this distinction? Because it's that that differentiates the Premier League rules from everywhere else.
Yeah, this, I think, is one of the main problems with the Premier League rules as they currently stand, is that they don't encourage teams to play the young players in place of unavailable senior players, which is what I think should be the way it works. You know, Arsenal have a great academy, has produced lots of good players. The Arsenal under-23s played on Friday night. They played against West Ham and drew 1-1. And so if they can put out a team of what I imagine to be very talented, well-trained young players who Arsenal will have spent years and millions of pounds developing, I don't understand why those players could not have made up the Arsenal first team on Sunday. I mean, of course they could. Leeds United beat West Ham yesterday afternoon. They brought on two teenagers from the bench. And you know, that wouldn't have been what Marcelo Bielsa would have ideally done. But equally, Bielsa felt an obligation to the competition to play the game.
God bless Senior Bielsa.
And also to his young players to give them a chance. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so frustrating to see Arsenal not take the opportunity to play their young players and to get the game postponed instead.
Well, look, I mean, let's look at an example from last season. I tweeted this on Saturday before the game was off. And this is not a game that the team in question won. In fact, it was a game that they lost 9-0. But Southampton at Old Trafford last February, I think it was the start of February, they had a massive injury crisis. They had loads of players missing. I think they had one COVID case at that point, but a lot of injuries. So their game at Old Trafford that they lost 9-0. In their starting 11, they had a 19-year-old making his debut, his Premier League debut. He was sent off after 2 minutes. Didn't go so great. Another 20-year-old playing his second Premier League game, his first Premier League game for about 4 years or 3 years, I think. On the bench, had two goalkeepers out of the nine players on the bench. Nathan Redmond, fine, fair enough. Two kids who had 91 Premier League minutes between them and another four kids who had no Premier League experience at all. And that happened a year ago. And no one's complained that Southampton shouldn't have had to play that game and that it was a complete, you know, it was a non-sporting event because Southampton weren't at full strength. People were taking the piss out of Southampton for losing a game 9-0 again. The reason I mention this and the reason I tweeted this on Saturday is it shows you that these things happen in normal, non-pandemic times.
Yeah.
They had one player at that point with COVID. Right. Arsenal, at the point that they were trying to get the game called up, had one player with COVID. We know you subsequently find a second case, which may or may not have moved a dial after that. Who knows? The clubs will be... And again, this is the Premier League more than Arsenal, obviously. And Premier League have set the standard, as Jack said. They've set the bar so low that we're able to get these games off where clubs only have one COVID case and... You know, in normal circumstances, if this game had been played 2 years ago or 3 years ago when the last AFCON was, and if Arsenal had four players away at AFCON and X injuries and one suspension, they wouldn't have dreamed of having the game off. It's just crazy that the bar has moved because of the pandemic when, in reality, that hasn't had as big a bearing on their issues as everything else.
I think what makes this so unprecedented and so worrying is that it is like an absolutely like bedrock part of competitive sport that teams play the games as they are scheduled, not at their convenience. Now, I appreciate that COVID is a unique thing, which means that if you have a virus ripping through your team and everyone is catching it from everyone else and you have to close the training ground, those are exceptional circumstances. But the Arsenal circumstances are not exceptional circumstances at all. They're the sort of thing that happens to a busy football team during a busy season. And if a team is able to pull out of a game at short notice because it is inconvenient for them to play and that they don't want to play, then we have removed one of like the we have removed something which is utterly fundamental to organised sport. Like someone whose name I forget, I'm afraid, tweeted me about this the other day, and they were kind of joking about it, and they said, imagine if on the morning of the final of France 98 Brazil had said, I'm really sorry FIFA, but Ronaldo's not right, can we maybe come back next week? Like it's ludicrous, it's utterly ludicrous that this can now be a consideration. This is an important point that Charlie made in his in the piece that he wrote this morning about the postponements, was this sense that some clubs feel that they are due a postponement, like they've seen other clubs use these rules to their benefit and think, you know what, we could do with a bit of that. So Arsenal had to play, when Arsenal lost at Brentford earlier in the season, they had lots of players unavailable through COVID. They're probably quite frustrated about how that went, given subsequent events. So maybe clubs will feel that way. And I'm sure they do. And I'm, you know, whether or not we blame Arsenal for this decision is, you know, another set of arguments. But I do think that the more this rule is used in these kind of incredibly borderline cases like this one, the more everyone else will think, you know what, I don't really, you know, our best player's got a bit of a knock, or, you know, they will see that they can, not only is the bar low, but they can kind of drag it even lower if circumstances combine in the right way. And that I think is why, even if the COVID situation in the UK is probably going to get less bad in the next month or so, I hope, fingers crossed, I think that the situation regarding these kind of postponements probably will get worse, because teams can see, you know, you're actually pushing against an open door with the Premier League, unfortunately. And I know not the Premier League would say not every request has been accepted, but a lot of requests have been accepted. And why wouldn't the clubs just ask?
I've seen quite a few people tweet off the back of this postponement that, or maybe it'll work in Spurs' favour because, you know, Arsenal will get some of their players back, and, you know, some of those players they've got at AFCON won't be in the starting 11. Aubameyang had lost his place in the team.
And Spurs will get the two central defenders and Son and Reguilón back, yeah.
Spurs will get those four players back. You know, who knows, maybe they'll sign a player in the transfer window before the end of the month, and yeah, you know, they might be in a stronger position by the time that game comes around. But that might not happen. Like, they could have more injuries by the time that comes around. They could be the one with suspensions by the time that comes around. If Spurs have four or five players missing and Arsenal are in a much better state than they are now when this game comes around, whenever it is, and that's another problem, when this game gets fitted in, by the way, all the other games Spurs have got to squeeze in. What are Spurs going to do? Are Spurs going to just take it and just play the game with a weakened team and potentially lose a massive game in terms of the battle for top four places?
Because of the so-called medical confidentiality, where we can't really see who has tested positive, who has tested negative, who has tested false positive. And what is to stop any club now just saying, I've got 15 players with slight ankle knocks?
But this is the point.
The Premier League can't test all those players for running ability. And so I never want to see Spurs take to the pitch again without Harry Kane up front fully fit. If you have to pretend they're all injured, pretend they're all injured. Get it called off.
The thing is, I'm generally in life, I'm slightly suspicious about people who use the kind of like slippery slope, thin end of the wedge argument, because I think often that's just not how the way the world works. And yet, I think this is one of the rare cases, Danny, in which the our old friend, the slippery slope argument, is actually relevant. Like, because we've seen it happen. We've literally seen it happen over the course of the last 2 months, how the bar has been brought down like this. And I think it bodes pretty ominously for the course of the second half of the Premier League season.
I can't believe that the Premier League have been daft enough to let this happen, because they got through the much more difficult season last year with Delta, with the full lockdown and all the rest of it, without making their league look disorganised and stupid. And now, with a much less dangerous variant, as it's turned out, people didn't know that in November, obviously. I mean, the league is tremendously successful commercially, but it looks like a mess here. It looks like it's a disorganised junk shop. And of course, what is the Premier League? It's just its members. At any given moment, it's the 20 teams who are in it. And it's only the permanent members, like the Security Council at the United Nations, that have any influence. And I don't understand. It's not an independent body, is it?
No, it's a members club.
And they're deciding on the fate of their own members.
And that's something that this is a kind of long-standing issue in English football, really, is that, you know, it's not like, you know, NFL with a commissioner or a sports league.
Yeah.
It's not really regulated, effectively, the Premier League. The Premier League is just what the clubs want it to be. And that's why, you know, in disciplinary cases, for example, the Premier League very rarely rules against its biggest members, because it is a members club. And in this kind of thing, like, the rules have been devised by the clubs themselves. And effectively, the clubs handed themselves this power to be able to play games at their own convenience. But obviously, it's had, whether it's an unintended or an intended consequence or not, we can argue about, but it has had the effect of really undermining the, you know, a big part of what makes competitive organised football work. So yeah, it's not a mess that I would have considered, I think any of us would have imagined happening a few months ago, but it is certainly a mess.
Nothing's going to change now, is it? Because they'll play the you can't change the rules in the middle of the season thing, and they haven't got a scheduled meeting until I think the second week of February.
Yeah, 10th of February, I believe.
Yeah. So hopefully, as we all desperately hope, this wave of the COVID-19 variants kind of fades away. We'll have less and less of this. Although I do think we're all right in saying people will have a very different view about their responsibility to fulfil fixtures following this. And in Charlie Eccleshare's piece, James, which I'm sure you polished up to make it as good as it is, he does make the point that there is a great deal now of rancour and toxicity among the Premier League clubs, one against the other, because people are finding different ways, and I'm not referring to one game here, they're finding different ways to make their schedule more comfortable.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, we know from the statement that Spurs put out on Saturday that they're unhappy with the way Arsenal have had this game postponed. And I think it's probably safe to assume that Arsenal were unhappy with the way that Liverpool had the first leg of that League Cup semi-final mm-hmm. postponed. And I'm sure there have already been instances where clubs have felt their nose have been put out of joint, and I'm sure there'll be many more to come between now and the end of the season. I don't think, you know, there are a lot of Arsenal fans on Twitter bemoaning the fact that, this is just before Christmas, bemoaning the fact that Spurs have had a couple of games off and had gained this kind of mid-season pre-season. They'd have a bit of a break and they'd be fresh and they could, you know, attack the second half of the season.
People are mad, aren't
they?
But
look at it now. Spurs have got four more games to squeeze in between now and the end of the season than West Ham have got, say. And of course, you know, one of them is this week and they will have had the weekend off. So in theory, they should be a bit fresher for that. And it sort of works out that the one afterwards is Chelsea away that they probably would have lost anyway. So actually, mm-hmm. it might not make that much of a difference. But there's still three more games, none of which have a date yet, by the way. Burnley was that the start of December or maybe even late November? It's before Omicron, wasn't it?
That was Snowicron, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That hasn't got a date yet. We've not got a date for the Brighton game that was the middle of December yet. And obviously Arsenal now to squeeze in as well. That could be quite fractious. The organising that Arsenal game, exactly where that fits in the calendar, that's going to be a real arm wrestle over that. Because exactly where that gets placed between away games and possible cup games, although obviously that won't be a factor for Arsenal, that could be really decisive. Like exactly where that squeezes in. And I don't imagine there's going to be too much slack given by either side in that particular conversation. And I mean, that could go on for weeks. And fans are the ones that have been mugged off here, you know, particularly people that have kind of planned to travel across the globe to be at the game. And I'm sure there would have been a lot of people in the away end as well, I'm sure, who would have had that in mind. And we're probably going to be waiting weeks before we find out when this game's going to be played.
I know one person who flew from Malaysia to see the match. I mean, those things can happen. You know, and it could have been an entire sort of COVID, 20 Arsenal players, 20 Spurs players, whoever got COVID. That was understandable. But I don't want to hear the people defending the current movement of it just because it advances their team, whichever team that is. I don't want them to see them crying on Twitter the next time the television companies, for their convenience, moves a game to a time when nobody can get home, the away fans and all the rest of it. Either you're for the fans or you're against them, and not tempering your view because it brings some tiny sliver of a percentage of advantage to your particular club. Sorry, Jack, I jumped in there ahead of you.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like you, I've seen people, I think I saw someone on Twitter who flew in from New York for this game. It was obviously very frustrating. I'm sure it's also like the second time that Spurs have had a really, really late cancellation. Like, remember the Burnley game that was snowed off, you know, which is obviously a different set of circumstances, but Tottenham were at Burnley when it was called off. The Leicester game in December, Tottenham were in their hotel in Leicester on the lunchtime of the day of the game when that game called off. And then for this particular game, you know, they were training on Saturday. They were at the training ground getting ready, trying to prepare the game for the next day in the dark, really, until I think it was Saturday lunchtime when they finally got word from the Premier League that the game was off. And so this must be, I mean, I do feel more sorry for the fans than the players as it happens, but also for the players themselves and for the coaching staff, etc. It must be, you know, just a massive pain in the ass trying to get yourself into kind of game mode and back out and then preparing for the Leicester game. You don't know if that's going to happen and all the rest of it. So it is just, yeah, it's been a total shambles.
And the stupid thing is Leicester's game at the weekend was also off because I think Burnley had a few cases and had to postpone. So both Spurs and Leicester, who will play midweek, have not played this weekend because of COVID cases with the other team. That's the stupid irony of it, isn't it? They could have played it the weekend.
And let's take a break there and come back to the more mundane matters of Spurs' latest injuries, the possibility of any players going in or out during the transfer window, and we'll preview that Leicester match as well. You're listening to The View from the Lane. Yeah, welcome back to View from the Lane. The voices you're hearing are me, Danny Kelly, Jack Pitbrook and James Moore. Let's talk about Son Heung-min's injury. It has become a matter of mystery. Got any inside knowledge on this, Jack? How, where, who, what's happening with him?
So basically, where the first leg of the Chelsea League Cup semi-final at Stamford Bridge on the 5th of January. So Son was taken off with, I think, about 15 minutes left. Not feeling an injury, but just really to rest him because he played so much football and all the games that Tottenham had coming up. The next day, so on the 6th of January, Son was scanned at Tottenham to reveal that he had what Conte's called a kind of a muscle problem. Hasn't said specifically which one, I don't think, but a muscle injury that Conte expected would put him out for the rest of January. Obviously, since then, Son missed the Morecambe game, which he probably would not have played anyway. And then, of course, the Chelsea second leg. Last time Conte spoke about this, he did leave open the possibility that maybe he'll be back at the end of the month. That would be the Chelsea game this coming Sunday, the 23rd. But
I like the way you've got your notes mic'd up so people can understand that you're researching this thing. That's very good.
But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect to see him against Leicester this Wednesday, assuming that game goes ahead, or to be honest, on Sunday. I think it's more likely that he would return to availability after the two-week break for the FA Cup fourth round against Brighton on Saturday, the 5th of February.
So, second week of February?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's quite a long break then, is that's over a month out injured.
That would be a month out.
For somebody who didn't even limp off of the pitch. What do they do about this, James? Are you in favour of this playing two up front, so 3-5-2, given that Spurs don't have another out-and-out striker to play with Harry Kane, and indeed have let a youthful prospect in that position go to Blackburn this very day?
I would say the 3-5-2 is probably the way to go with or without Son in the short term. I just think that's a slightly better system.
And acknowledging that you probably don't have UEFA coaching badges, do you want the person who plays with Kane to be right up front with him or slightly playing around him, slightly behind him? How do you want this to work?
I think you probably want, well, what you would want with Son is for him to be kind of buzzing around all around him and able to go beyond him and be played through one-on-one by Kane, right? Which I wouldn't say Lucas was as suited to as Son, but I think he's probably the best option of a squad to do that. So I think if you played Kane as your kind of point man and Lucas sort of being typically busy around him, that probably would seem like the best solution to that.
Which takes us to the issue of Steven Bergwijn, who's the first of the transfer things I want to talk about, because does Conte keep hinting that he thinks Bergwijn, Jack, will make a striker?
Yeah, Conte has often talked about Bergwijn as being an option as a number nine, which I think is something that he could do. So was it the West Ham game just before Christmas, where Bergwijn kind of played in that sort of role and proved himself, you know, he's strong enough, he can hold the ball. Not only is he very good dribbling, carrying the ball forward, he's also strong enough to hold the ball up in the box and link with other players running in, as he showed in that game. And he is capable of scoring goals. I mean, his goal record, I think, is not as good as it should be, given how talented he is. But if he gets his confidence back, you can definitely see him scoring a few. Obviously, it's, you know, Bergwijn has been injured recently, has also been the subject of a £15 million bid from Ajax. At the moment, I expect him to stay, although that situation could change. But yeah, if Bergwijn can get fully fit again, I think Conte would like the option of playing him up front.
In the last 24 hours, Ajax have freed up both more cash and indeed a position which Bergwijn could play with the sale of David Neres, I thought rather surprisingly, given how many clubs have admired him, to Shakhtar Donetsk. So I think Ajax will be back in for Bergwijn, because otherwise why would they be letting Neres go? I'm not sure.
Maybe. I do think the view at Spurs is that, one, like, Ajax haven't offered enough money for Bergwijn yet, but also Tottenham do think that Bergwijn would be quite hard to replace. You know, he can play up front or on the wing. He's got a fair bit of decent experience. He's dangerous. I don't think they... I don't think they think it's necessarily in their interest to let him go this month, even though he hasn't played an awful lot recently.
Let's go then to something that seems to bother us every week on this programme, the Ndombele conundrum. Things have changed again, James, now. I mean, again, insofar as not only is he making sporadic appearances for the first team, but he's not even training with them now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly ominous sign, isn't it? I think of... What was the term they used, Jack, to describe? Sorry, Jack was telling me on the phone.
I think it was specialised conditioning training.
So this is
what does that mean?
This is a relative of running around the park during the first lockdown with Jose Mourinho, is it? That was specialised conditioning training as well, wasn't it?
But presumably legal this time. It is fairly obvious, that, isn't it? I think if you're sent to train on your own after being hooked against Morecambe and not even being in the squad against Chelsea. Obviously, this would have ruled him out of contention to play against Arsenal if Arsenal could be bothered to play the game. And you would suspect will mean he's very, very unlikely to be involved against Leicester in midweek. Yeah, it doesn't look great for him. It does kind of smack of a player being kind of kept in the fringes on the off chance that a bid does come in the next sort of 10, 12 days or whatever.
My reading of this is that it's very easy for people to use fitness as a stick to beat Ndombele with. And, you know, there certainly have been points in the first year or two of his time at Tottenham where he wasn't fully fit, where he couldn't do 90 minutes. He had to get up to speed with the pace of the Premier League, all that. That's something that I think was certainly true for a while. But Ndombele's been fully fit for quite a while. You know, fitness was not the reason that Mason didn't pick him or that Nuno didn't pick him or that Conte hasn't been picking him. You know, when Conte came in the end of October, early November, you know, there were quite a few Tottenham players who were not fully fit, but Ndombele was not one of them. You know, Ndombele is fit. My reading of this is that even though Tottenham are calling it specialised conditioning training, I think in reality, I think it's more likely to be, we don't really want you around here anymore. You're not part of Antonio's first team plans. And frankly, maybe it'd be better for everyone if you went off to a different club. Of course, in practice...
But how can that happen with £200,000 a week bleeding out of him?
Well, I don't think Tottenham... Look, I don't know specifically, but I get the impression that Ndombele has... It's not just about whether or not Tottenham will be willing to do a deal with the club. Ndombele has to want to go as well. And I think Ndombele has very high expectations of the level of club that he would go to. At the start of the season, he was wanting to go to Bayern, Barca, or Real Madrid. And I think that if Tottenham can kind of encourage Ndombele to maybe lower his sights a little bit on a different level of club, then I think that might be a route to finding an acceptable outcome for everyone. But I don't think that they're not there yet on the 17th of January.
Any sign, Jack, James, or anyone who can help me with this, any sign of any footballers arriving at Spurs? there's a silence to speak volumes.
I think it's more likely than not that they will end up signing Adama Traore. Traore, I gather, is still the likeliest target to come in. Tottenham are working on trying to get a deal done. Wolves do want to sell him. Tottenham are trying to find a way to do it, whether or not that is...
Even though he got his first goal or assist in 23 appearances.
Yeah, some people talk about the possibility of a loan with an obligation. And I do think that if Matt Doherty were to go back to Wolves, it would be slightly easier because that could be part of the deal. But so far, I haven't got any indication that that is actually going to happen, even if Tottenham would like that to happen. So they're not there yet. I do think they'll get it over the line just because it is ultimately a deal that suits all three parties, and it would be a bit of a disaster not to sign anyone at all this month. But they're not there yet.
It's not stopped them before.
No, indeed not.
I wish I could give the Spurs fans a bit more news about incoming transfers, but if Jack don't know, nobody knows. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. Let's talk about Leicester then. That's coming up as well. A difficult one to call this because Leicester have been in kind of up and down form and haven't played for a while. And Spurs, much as I was angry about the two games against Chelsea, that's not been the median of their form, has it, James?
Yeah, no. I mean, we were looking at that Piers Morgan tweet over the weekend where he suggested that on current league form, Arsenal reserves would beat Spurs, which, you know, if that's the case...
Bear in mind he's a moron, yeah?
But quite. If that's the case, one, play the game. And two, I mean, Spurs are unbeaten under Conte in the Premier League.
But they haven't played Arsenal's reserves, to be fair to Piers, yeah.
That is true. They haven't faced the ultimate test. So yeah, that does seem quite, you know, that is kind of incongruous with the kind of vibes at the moment, isn't it? That they're eight unbeaten and they've won, what, five of those?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're in reasonably good nick in the league, actually.
To be fair, those vibes have been largely created by me and you doing our nuts here on the podcast. The negative vibes were caused by you and I.
Yeah, that is true.
So we're past that now. We're trying to look forward to the sunlit uplands of the second half of the season, playing four games in a week to qualify for the Europa League. And we'll see what happens. Jack, what do you think will happen against Leicester? Or is this kind of speculation anathema to a man of your standing?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen.
No.
But I do think that it's not necessary. I don't think it's... For as much as we complained about the postponement, and I do think the postponement... As I said on Twitter the other day, I think it is a scandal that a game could be called off under those circumstances. An opinion that has seen many Arsenal fans send me messages on Twitter accusing me of all sorts of things. I do think it's not necessarily that bad for Tottenham to not be playing right now, in part because they're not playing well. Like, Tottenham haven't really played well since Boxing Day.
No, they're stumbling along, aren't they?
Yeah, both those against Chelsea, Morecambe, Watford, they're a bit unlucky against Saints. So... And they've got a lot of players out who hopefully will be back soon. You know, Reguilon's had a problem. Son is out at the moment. Romero's still on his way back. Dyer was out and then had another muscle problem, which is what, you know, obviously a big part of why Tottenham haven't been very good recently. So if Tottenham can get good players back soon, like Conte in the press conference the other day, like the main story at the press conference was Conte three times, like Peter denying Jesus, three times refusing to give assurances that he will see out his contract.
I saw that.
But amid that, he also said, it's a matter of life for Tottenham getting their top players back. You know, Conte is very, very dependent on these guys. Son, Dyer, Romero, Reguilon. If they can just get one or two of those guys back for this game and the Chelsea game, then I think it's kind of a different prospect. What they won't want to do is keep playing big games, frankly, with Doherty and Tanganga in the team.
Well, to be honest, they've had options other than playing Matt Doherty in a position where he clearly is utterly, utterly unused to and not good enough with his left foot to play that position. So that some of that is down to Conte as well. There are always options. You can play with a back four and play Davis at left back, where much criticised as he used to be as a backup to Danny Rose, compared to watching Matt cutting inside onto his right foot and slowing down every single attack, I still think he would be a better option.
I have to say, I do feel a bit for Doherty at the moment because he's widely...
Danny, go easy. Come on, mate. We're trying to sell this guy. Big him up.
Tottenham are trying to move him. He's played the last three games. The fans are getting on his back. I thought the fans were on his back a lot in the Chelsea second leg last week. You know, maybe I don't especially blame the fans for that. That's just part of football. And he was out of position trying to play. I mean, to be honest, in that game, at times Tottenham were more in a sort of 4-4-2. Doherty was playing out wide on the left. And given that he's not left-footed and not really that quick, it seemed, you know, a very square peg in a very round hole. So I do feel a bit for him at the moment. But clearly, if they get Reguilon or even Sessegnon in that position, then they'll be able to open up the pitch a bit more.
We shouldn't forget, by the way, when we're talking about that Leicester game, that Leicester, having talked about injuries at other clubs, Leicester actually do have quite a lot of injuries. I mean, they'll probably have, and a couple of players at AFCON as well, they'll probably have... six or seven players at least missing. I mean, I'm not saying that means Spurs are gonna walk over them, but you know, it's got to increase the chances of Spurs winning slightly. Sure.
Oh, and that's why, given the events of the last 2-3 days, I have absolutely no confidence of this game at Leicester going ahead. Why wouldn't Leicester, if somebody tests positive in the next couple of days, say we just don't have enough players to fulfil this fixture? I hope they can do, and I hope they do, and I hope all of their players, officials and supporters stay well, obviously, but we're through the looking glass here, people, as we started the show by saying.
The reason they might be reluctant is because they also have only played 18 Premier League games, and if this game got postponed again, they would have a similar problem to Spurs, and they're still in Europe and the FA Cup as well.
It's like that thing that fans always say, which is, you know, we might be getting linked with a player, but I'll only really believe that he's signing when I see him. holding the club's scarf on the website. That's weirdly now how I feel about fixtures, in the sense that I might have Leicester versus Tottenham written down in my diary, but I won't believe it's happening until I see Hugo Lloris leading out 11 Spurs players at 7:45
and the referee grabbing the ball off that ridiculous podium.
Grab the ball on the pedestal, that's when I think, yes, Leicester City versus Tottenham Hotspur is actually happening. But until then, it's just a kind of, you know, like a promise.
Yeah, and even then, as the referee grabs the football off the pedestal, one of the Spurs or Leicester players could, as often happens, twist a knee between the pedestal and the kickoff, and suddenly the appeal will be going in to the Premier League to have the game abandoned. It's been a laugh, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed. And if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of our articles on Spurs and everything else on the site by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now, you can get 33% off a full subscription. We'll be back on Thursday. Thank you for listening. Thanks to James and thanks to Jack. As I say, hopefully there'll be an actual football match for us to discuss.
The Athletic.